Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
When you see a person getting angry, yelling at a waiter, yelling at other guests in a restaurant, even road rage, if he's doing that with strangers and you're going to live with this person for the rest of your life, there's going to be a high chance he's going to express that anger on you all the time.
That's good advice from pastor and author Dan Chun, and Dan should know. He's a senior pastor now, but when he first started out in ministry, he served as the singles pastor at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, and it was a big group. It was a large group of people, men and women, who were single and some looking to get married and some not, and did a lot of research, did a lot of case studies with them, and now that helps him in his pastoral counseling. And if you're a pastor listening to the program today, I hope you'll pay close attention, because today on the Homeward broadcast, parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns will be talking with pastor and author Dan Chun about finding a lifelong partner in marriage. Dan's written a book called How to Pick a Spouse, and it's a great resource that we have up at homeward.com. Very, very practical conversation. This is the second half of a two-part conversation, and now let's get right to it. Here's Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today, a continuing conversation with my good friend Dan Chun. He's written a great book called How to Pick a Spouse. That's going to be our topic for the day. And I guarantee you, even if you are already married or you are not with a dating relationship right now, well, you're going to benefit from this broadcast. And if you're a parent, no doubt you need to hear this for your kids. As always, Homeward is broadcast on stations all over America, Canada, Great Britain, and podcast around the world via Homeward website and iTunes. Dan Chun is, as I mentioned, one of my very favorite people. Dan is the pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Honolulu, Hawaii, and he's the co-founder of a great ministry. It's called Hawaiian Island Ministries, and that's along with his wife, Pam, who co-founded that. And he and Pam live in Hawaii, and they have three children. They have two dogs, which is an addition. Dan, I got to hang out with at least one of your dogs about a year ago. You're a dog lover, aren't you?
Yeah, now we have a Yorkshire Terrier Poodle, and we have a Shih Tzu Pomeranian.
You can't say that
Max
word
and
on
Molly.
You can't say that word on Homeward. No. Well, anyway, welcome to the broadcast.
It's known as a Sheranian. How's that?
That's
known
very
as
good.
A Sheranian and a Yorkie Poodle.
Anyway, welcome to the broadcast. Love having you
great
on.
To be
so
here.
So glad that you're here, and I mentioned that how much I appreciate you, and I appreciate your leadership and your years of integrity, and I'm thrilled that you've written and are speaking on the subject of how to pick a spouse. I think it's one of the biggest issues of the day. And actually, I want to get right into it. We're in a continuing conversation, but I want to get right into the issue of sexuality. So oftentimes today, when I do premarital counseling and I say, what kind of baggage are you bringing into the relationship? They almost always go to, well, I was in a previous relationship and we went too far, or I was living with somebody, or cohabitation is a big thing today. And yet one of the things that you say in your book is, in choosing a spouse, it's in your best interest to not have sex before marriage. That sounds old-fashioned. It sounds biblical, too, but it sounds old-fashioned. Talk about it.
Well, you know, when we are in this kind of weird zone, when we're infatuated, we tend to have our guard down, and we sometimes equate love with sex. But actually, why it is in our best interest to wait until marriage for sex is because sex is deceiving on intimacy. So first of all, it's kind of like when we get involved physically, it's more like an escalator that keeps going higher and getting more involved, as opposed to an elevator where we think, oh, I can go to the 8th floor and now go down to the 2nd floor and get more involved on the 7th floor and go less involved on the 1st floor. And it really escalates. It binds and blinds us. It binds us because emotionally and physically we feel so close to that person, we think, this is the one I need to marry. And it also blinds us to the person's faults. And it has to do with things like oxytocin that can kick in. And it actually is a chemical in our body that, you know, like when a mother is nursing a baby, they get bonded by that because oxytocin starts flowing. And when we have sex with someone, oxytocin starts flowing, and we immediately think, this is the person I've got to marry. And again, this person has no faults, and because I'm blinded by that, and I'm bound by this person because of the sex act. And there's a reason God has asked us to wait until the commitment of marriage for sex, because we will be able to choose more wisely. And there are many other reasons, too, why it's good to wait.
No, it's so important. In fact, I wish that America could just hear that last, you know, paragraph that you said. And it's so right. I remember reading years ago a man named Dr. Ray Short, who was at the University of Wisconsin, who said that sex fools you into instant intimacy. And he was talking about the difference between infatuation and true love. And he said, you know, if you have a sexual relationship before you get married, then you don't know if that's infatuation or love, because for about 2 or 3 years, you could be blinded by what you were talking about, this bonding that takes place. And you get married in the middle of it, and you wake up one day and you go, wow, you know, I don't not only not love this person, I don't even like this person. Sure, I've been physically intimate with them, but, you know, we should have never gotten together. And I think way too many people today, and I think they're part often of the divorce rate statistics that we've talked about, are part of the divorce rate statistics because they got married when they shouldn't have, but it was because they were in a physically intimate relationship.
Well, and, you know, and that's the weird thing, in that you would think logically, like, cohabitation would work. You know, you kind of test it out, like testing a car, kick the tires, making sure it turns and spins properly. But all the research that I've read, and I put a lot of it in the book has a lot of humor, but it also has a lot of statistics in it, in that the myth of cohabitation is they actually, those who live together have a higher rate of divorce than those who choose not to. And you may say, well, how does that work? And I think it's because, A, I think the sex part blinds them and binds them too early. But second is you cannot practice commitment. Either you are forever committed or you're not. And sometimes those who sleep together or live together, they are just practicing commitment. It doesn't work.
And, you know, you say in your book, commitment is the glue that keeps relationships stable through thick and thin. Talk about commitment.
Well, if you think about it, we are what makes us a good person or a bad person is we are the sum of all the commitments we keep. We are the sum of all the promises we keep. And that is the essence of character and commitment, that we are promising that we're going to hang in there no matter what. And that's what we want. We want to marry somebody who can love us unconditionally, marry someone who actually mirrors that wonderful element of God.
Yeah. You know, I found in my own relationship with Kathy that over the years, commitment became a willful commitment. And that sounds, I know, so unromantic. The romance is there, but there's sometimes just you said it, you made a promise. You know, I stood before God and my pastor and my family and my friends, and I said, I promise, I will, I do. And I think when you make that promise, the promise is what solidifies oftentimes the depth of a relationship. And that's commitment.
Yeah, I think love is really based on and you're right, it sounds so unromantic, is based on this gut level commitment that is not necessarily based on feelings.
Yeah.
We love people sometimes when we don't feel like we want to.
No, you're exactly right. Now, you don't think marriage is a 50-50 deal, do you?
No, I actually think, and this is part of my premarital counseling. In fact, what I use for premarital counseling, I have this long survey, which is in the appendix of my book, too. So people or pastors, anyone can use that.
Very good survey, by the way.
Check.
I've stolen it already. I just want you to know.
Wow. Well, you're the expert, man. So that's a great accolade, great affirmation. So in my premarital counseling, I talk about how marriages should be a 60-40 deal. And we hear in the world it should be 50-50. You do your part, I do my part. But really, we're called to live in a 60-40 relationship where I'm willing to give more than my share, sacrifice my time, my physical tiredness. I'll do anything to make this work. And if you get two people who both come in with 60-40 attitude, where they're all trying to outdo the other in love and in service, then if it turns out it's 50-50, well, you know, then that's icing on the cake because you only expected 40 back. But when we're at 50-50, you start keeping score. Hey, look, I took out the garbage. You know, you should at least cook. Well, look, cooking takes longer. Okay, well, I washed the dishes then. You know, and that's really not what love is about. Love is going far beyond what the other person is doing and not expecting that person to match you or outdo you.
No, it's a great point. I was thinking, and we're going to take a break here in a moment, but I was thinking about two very special people in my life, Helen and Lee, and Helen just passed away, and a wonderful, wonderful, gorgeous 80-year-old person who was married to Lee. And they were at a seminar that I was, I was doing a marriage conference at a hotel, and they were sitting with my wife, Kathy, and I went over to them thinking, you know, they've been married for so long. What do they need from this marriage conference? And I said, you know, what's the secret? And she kind of smiled and looked at her husband, Lee, and said, do you remember what I said to you the first day of our marriage? And he kind of smiled. And he said, yeah. And she kind of said, well, what did I say, you know, in a marriage thing? And he said, well, you said, I'm going to outlove you every day of my life. And then he said, well, what did I say to you?
That's great.
And she said, well, you said, no, I'm going to outlove you. And, you know, at her funeral, Lee said, she outloved me. She outserved me, with tears, you know, in his eyes and tears in many people's eyes, because what a incredible thing. They never looked at it as a 50-50 deal. And sometimes I would bet, especially at the end when she was troubled with Parkinson's, it was probably an 80-20 thing, or maybe even a 90-10 for a while. But there's other times when, you know, that's just marriage. It's great input, and great input even thinking about how to pick a spouse. Listen, we're going to take a break. Dan Chun is with us. We're talking about his book, How to Pick a Spouse. And by the way, it has a great amount of humor and a great amount of wisdom. And you can even go to howtopickaspouse.com. Get all kinds of good information on that as well. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Burns. Don't go away. Looking forward to being with you in this next segment.
Right. We're just going to jump in here briefly and let you know that what the book that Jim is recommending today, we've got it up at homeward.com. And also, we have marriage resources available for you as well if you go to our online resource center at homeward.com and check out the articles and tip sheet section, articles and media. There's so many different articles, tip sheets, video clips, and more. Those are all free without charge. And so if you are looking for resources, whether you want to pick a spouse, improve the quality of your marriage, go to homeward.com. articles and media section. And now here's the conclusion of today's program. Once again, here's Jim.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Thrilled to have you with us today. Great conversation. I love doing radio because we get conversations like this. So good, so important for all of us to know. We're talking about how to pick a spouse today. Dan Chun is with us. He's my good friend. He is the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in Honolulu, Hawaii. He's also the co-founder of a wonderful, wonderful ministry called Hawaiian Island Ministries, and he co-founded that along with his wife, Pam. And they've got a conference every year that is one of the highlights for me. And it's not just to go to a conference. I always say it's one of the finest conferences I ever go to. And they bring in incredible communicators and over 4,000 people, and it's at the Hawaii Convention Center. And it's always a great, great time, usually in the month of March. And actually, people from the mainland come to it, too. Also, our listeners in Hawaii, who are many, come, and then I get to meet some of them as well. Dan, we're talking about how to pick a spouse. It's the topic of your book. One of the conversations that we haven't talked about yet is the faith conversations. And you said, and I found this to be a very interesting quote in your book, I find for Christians who either marry a non-Christian or a Christian who is far less devout, normally the faith of the couple gravitate to the common denominator, which means they kind of gravitate away from a deeper faith. What's your take on Christians marrying non-Christians or even those who aren't as devout as themselves?
Yeah, the interesting, peculiar thing is that when a Christian marries a non-Christian, or even when a Christian marries an immature Christian, normally it gravitates towards the less mature or towards a non-Christian, so that, again, during the weird zone where they're dating and they're infatuated, the non-Christian goes with you to church and, you know, wants to impress you and be with you. But then when they're married, they say, you know what, I don't want to go to church. And after a while, the Christian says, well, I can't leave my husband at home, so I guess I'd better stay, you know, and then he doesn't want the kids to church. And then it's, well, I want to stay with my husband and kids, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's how it slowly starts, and which is sad because it also means there starts to be a lack of a standard operating procedure, so to speak.
Yes.
So like if there is a fight, you know, you're not fighting according to biblical principles. You're not forgiving according to biblical principles. You're falling into the worldly way of doing
it. Yeah, you're really picking a different blueprint. You know, there's a blueprint plan to you know, be better. In many ways, your book is a blueprint, Ben, but the Bible has many blueprints, you know, a way of life, a purpose. And when you don't have that, you're going to have to take a different plan because they're not going to be on the same page as you in many ways.
Well, purely relationally, you know, if we're claiming, if you're a follower of Christ, and you're claiming that Jesus is my best friend, and you can't share your best friend with your spouse,
yeah,
that's already pretty sad.
Sure, sure. I love the way that you've said that. You talk about issues in the book and issues that you might even be looking out for in a dating relationship. And I know you mentioned things like anger and codependency, many others, in-laws, addictions. But I want you to talk specifically about anger and codependency. What do you see in people who are angry or codependent that really make it tough to, you know, have a thriving marriage?
Well, let's pick anger to start off with. I think anger is interesting because it really is a forewarning. It's the siren going off. When you see a person getting angry, needlessly angry, yelling at a waiter, yelling at other guests in a restaurant, even road rage, if he's doing that with strangers and you're going to live with this person for the rest of your life, there's going to be a high chance he's going to express that anger on you all the time.
Right. Right.
And so we really need to be careful about that. And we know about the high domestic violence rate in Christian families.
Yeah, and that's a real red flag, isn't it?
We have to be careful.
Yeah, it's a real red
flag. Right, because they could harm you or your children.
Exactly. And typically, if they have to work on it beforehand, and if they're not willing to work on it, then, you know, to me, that's a huge red flag. Let's talk about codependency for a minute. What do you mean by that, and then where do you see that coming in terms of a relationship?
Well, codependency is when we think a relationship is more important than ourselves, and then we do anything for the relationship, and even if it's to our peril about ourselves. And so it could be a codependent relationship with our mother or father.
Yeah.
And then that gets into the relationship. Now there's a triangle. And so it's very, very hard when basically codependency is when you're dependent on the relationship, not necessarily the person, for fulfillment. Yeah. And that relationship could be with your parents, with a friend, with whoever. And so it's just dangerous.
No, again, that's another red flag. And we won't have time to go through all of those issues that you did. But I thought you did a marvelous job in that chapter as we kind of think through that. And I call it almost the red flag chapter because, again, a red flag chapter can move to a yellow flag and you can get victory in it and there can be grace and whatnot. But I think we do have to come into marriage with our eyes wide, wide open. A lot of times we simply don't. Talk to me for a minute about this phrase: when you marry your spouse, you also marry the in-laws. What would you think about that?
Well, rightfully or wrongfully, and I kind of go through that in my premarital survey too. You know, I ask, what are the good things about your parents' marriage? What are the bad things? What do you like about your dad or dislike it? And same for the mom, because there is a script written in our hearts and souls that our parents wrote. And because they were the primary caretakers for us. And so we oftentimes, much to our frustration, we duplicate or mimic those same kinds of things. And so if we haven't figured out how our parents were in our life, or even our in-laws, we find we're going to respond the same way, and that we understand how that affects us.
Yeah, no, that is, it's so critical. A lot of times we just kind of put them out of the picture, and we just simply can't do that. I saw you at a conference, and the week before I saw you at a conference, Homeward had a conference. We had about 1,300 people at a marriage conference. It was incredible. But I asked the question, how many of you met online? And I know that the average is 1 out of 7 marriages meet online. I would say at this conference, it was probably 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6. There was almost a hush with the crowd when they saw all the hands go up. What's your thought on online dating?
Well, that's interesting. You know, there are about 54 million singles in the United States. And according to statisticbrain.com, 40 million have tried online dating.
Sure.
Isn't that amazing?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
And a few research says, you know, at least 11 Americans do that. But so I think there's some strong pros and cons about online dating. And the pros are, you know, you find people outside your usual social circle through that, and that you're already going on, you're already doing the homework of what are your needs and likes and dislikes. And that is fantastic. And so, and you're also with people you know who are interested in dating. You know, when you walk into a party and you see single people, you don't know if they're interested in dating, so that's weird. And then, after a while, you get this buffet of choices of who would work and, you know, who would not work. On the con side, it takes a lot of time, and it can be expensive. And you do have to know that appearance is not everything, that the picture they're showing you may not be what they really look like, and that you do have to be careful out there. There could be some kooky people.
Yes.
And so I suggest in the book that when you first meet this person, meet in a public place, in a restaurant, and maybe have your friends nearby or a quick text where you can say, pick me up right away.
Is
you get more exposure. You get more exposure, you get more flattery, and you get more rejection. So that's kind of the con, too.
Right, right. Well, why I ask you that, because I thought in your book how you handled the pros and the cons was just great. And kind of speaking of this, it kind of moves me to another question about remarriage. One of the things you said in your book was, if you don't know what went wrong the first time, then you're probably going to bring some of that same luggage into the second marriage. And you said you have to really ruthlessly take a self-inventory. Speak to that.
Yeah, I strongly believe that. You really have to be humble enough to figure out what went wrong.
Yeah.
Because you're going to duplicate it if you don't know what it is.
Yes.
And so if you tend to work too hard in your job and you do it again, you're going to put your marriage in peril or pick whatever topic. So it's very important to figure out what happened. And remarriage is tough, too, because you have past memories. There may be children involved, and so there's blended family issues, and so it can get quite complex.
Yeah.
But
it is complex.
You have to take some self-inventory.
Right, exactly. It's complex. It's complicated. It doesn't mean it can't be done. It's done very well when people really take the time to do it intentionally. And one of the things that how to pick a spouse is I thought, you know, the advice and wisdom that you're giving, along with some of the humor, is just it's being intentional about making one of the most important decisions of your life.
Well, some of the things I talk about in the book is, you know, and I'm having fun with this, but everybody has a good OS or a good operating system, and you need to see what that is like that really makes that person tick. What are the foundations? And then, of course, those red flags that you had mentioned earlier, I talk about antivirus software that needs to go beep, 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 beep when we see things like anger and codependency or addictions and things like that.
Yeah, and part of that is, as parents and grandparents, if we can teach our kids that at even a younger age, then maybe they'll be able to have that software, you know, planted even when they're younger. I don't have much time left, but I want to ask you this question. I'm thinking about a lot of the listeners at Homeward, and I love these people, and these people are part of what I call my congregation. But there's parents and grandparents who are listening who have children, they might even have grandchildren in their lives, who already made a poor decision or making a poor decision right now when it comes to picking a spouse. What do you say to them who are kind of grieving some of the decisions their kids are making?
Wow, that's a really difficult question. On one hand, you can't unscramble eggs. And if, you know, I'm all for lifelong commitment for marriage. And I think if they're going through a difficult time, they really need to get them to a good therapist. There's just no way around it, because there are no short answers. And I dare say, as a pastor, pastors are not always the best counselors. We're not trained in that, especially in long-term therapy. So get them to a good therapist.
Yeah, great input.
But if there's physical harm, they need to separate immediately.
Great input. Well, Dan, thank you so much for taking time. As we mentioned at the beginning, I'm here in Southern California. You're in Honolulu, Hawaii. Pleasure to talk with you always. And
thank you for inviting me. I'm going to send you a box of chocolate macadamias for that.
Boy, that's funny. Dan, I appreciate that. Roger Marsh here, back in the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. Appreciate the offer for the chocolate-covered macadamia nuts, but I have to admit that Jim goes over to Hawaii so often, it seems. We've always got a box here in the office. Anyway, but maybe Dan sends them to us. Our thanks again to Dan Chun. The book is called How to Pick a Spouse, and it's up at homeward.com. We've been talking over the past couple of programs about finding a lifelong partner. partner in marriage. If you've missed any part of this conversation, if you want to hear it again, the audio is archived at homeward.com. We have podcast options available too through iTunes. And if you'd like a CD of the program, we'll be happy to send you one. All you have to do is drop us a note and include a gift of any amount in support of our ministry. We'll thank you for that tax-deductible donation by sending you a copy of the audio CD featuring Jim Burns and Dan Chun talking about finding a lifelong partner in marriage. Go to homeward.com for that. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.